proceed to the second case of the day, Weyerhaeuser Company v. United States Railroad Retirement Board. Is that Mr. Shees? How do you pronounce that?
Shees, Your Honor.
Shees? All right. Mr. Shees.
Good morning. May it please the Court. In case 3455, the Railroad Retirement Board issued a decision awarding Retirement Act credit to four employees without following its own regulations. Now, once the board held that these four employees were covered by the Railroad Retirement Act, they were entitled to 4 years of retroactive credit. But the board awarded them extra credit without making the required finding of fraud, employer fraud. If the board had followed its regs, it would not have awarded this extra credit because it had already found in two decisions before the decision on appeal that there was no evidence of fraud. Now, the statute, Section 9 of the Retirement Act, says that records of service, records of compensation, are conclusive unless an error is called to the attention of the board within 4 years.
I'm sorry to stop you, but I have to. Who bears the burden of production and the burden of proof on the employer's intent?
On the employer's intent, if I can answer who bears the burden of proof on the employer fraud, the employees, the party.
I mean, the employer would seem to have the best evidence of its own intent.
The board.
But here, the employer was never required to show its intent.
Well, the question of coverage was the first question before the board. And in 2002, the board conducted an audit. And in the course of that audit, the employer produced answers to questions about the coverage of the individuals. And all of that went into the record. So the record has substantial evidence on the presence or the absence of fraud. And the board, and it's not in dispute that the employees have the burden of proof on proving fraud.
But it seems that the company was never asked to explain why it treated certain employees differently than in some cases the very employees that they replaced. So why not, at this juncture, why not appoint an examiner to determine the fraud question?
Well, first of all, I don't think that the record reflects that people were replaced with people who were put on retirement. What the record reflects is that there was a question about the coverage of individuals.
No. People left, new employees are put into the same positions. I mean, working on this in the same areas, but they're treated differently.
The four employees in case 3455, there's nothing in the record on those four employees being replaced by other employees. The employees on at least 11 separate occasions asked the board for a hearing on the issue of employer fraud. Those requests, by and large, came after the retirement board conducted an audit, an extensive audit.
Oh, okay. Let me try and give you an example, although this is not easy. BB. Okay, BB replaces a railroad employee who was credited as a railroad employee when he was hired. And even though Weyerhaeuser was his nominal employer, his salary is charged directly back to a DQE.
BB came to work for, as I'll say, as a, to avoid confusion, a payroll employee of Weyerhaeuser, provided services in the shop, which is variously referred to as the Weyerhaeuser shop or the DQE shop. It's the railroad shop. BB performed services for Weyerhaeuser and for other customers of the shop. There was a question, no longer an issue, but there was a question about whether BB should be construed as an employee of the railroad or as an employee of a paper company, Weyerhaeuser.
So, but how can I know this?
Excuse me?
Why wouldn't a remand be appropriate so that an examiner can make these fact findings? In other words, wouldn't we have to take your word against their word?
Not at all, Your Honor. You don't have to take my word against their word. The record shows an audit. The record shows a lot of question and answer documentation on the employees. The retirement board, which has discretion to determine how it's going to gather evidence, decided or had the opportunity to decide on more than 10 occasions that it had a paper record and it could assess the veracity of the evidence and assess the veracity of Weyerhaeuser. It concluded in its discretion that there was no evidence of fraud.
No, for evidence of fraud, because there's some, I guess that maybe there's some question of how to define it, but I guess it has to be there's intent. This knew or should have known sort of a negligence standard versus something they intended. They recognized the problem but just thought they could get away with it, something like that, I guess.
Well, I think you're right, Your Honor. There is a distinction between intent and, I would add, willfulness on the one hand, and knowledge, and I would add constructive knowledge on the other hand. We believe that the board's reg, the fraud exception, would require some level of willfulness or intent. That's what the board did in the Chandler case, where they found...
Forgive me, but without evidentiary hearings, how can we know this?
Well,
there are three distinct groups of employees here, each with overlapping and unique issues, and it seems that Weyerhaeuser has never been forced to answer the allegations, and there have been no evidentiary hearings. But at the same time, it seems there seem to be many open fact issues, as Judge Mannion just noted, about Weyerhaeuser's intent. And the board seems to have treated the employees as having the burden of production on the issue of the employer's intent. But you've got employees here who didn't have much information, and I don't know, isn't an employer's intent uniquely within the employer's knowledge?
Well, I think if you look at the record, you'll see three things directly pertaining to your concern, Your Honor. First of all, the 1995 consultant's report says that Weyerhaeuser employees are covered, that there's an issue of retirement coverage on these shop employees because Weyerhaeuser is controlled or under control with the railroad and provides services to the railroad. Well, that statement, when made, was wrong as a matter of law. So that doesn't bear on the intent at all. It can't bear on intent. A consultant report that's wrong as a matter of law when issued can't bear on intent. That is the only thing after the entire audit process that the board thought was relevant to the issue of fraud. The board took that piece of evidence and they concluded that it was not sufficient evidence to show fraud. Then, to your question about whether Weyerhaeuser has never been forced to answer, there was a rehearing request.
Oh, I know.
And the employees submitted no new evidence. So Weyerhaeuser, I think reasonably, said there's no new evidence. The only evidence that the board considered at all relevant to the fraud issue has been rejected. So rather than repeat the arguments that the board had already made in its conclusions, Weyerhaeuser simply pointed out that there was no new evidence. On the issue of intent, willfulness on the one hand, or knowledge, constructive knowledge on the other, we think that the board couldn't reasonably interpret the fraud exception to be a constructive knowledge negligence type standard. That to do so would be inconsistent with the Chandler case, where they found fraud and let the employees have extra credit. We think it would be inconsistent with the board's own rule on fraud and fault in the context of the repayment of benefits to employees. We also think it would be inconsistent with the board's rationale in the two penultimate decisions where they found no fraud. In other words, if the court adopts the argument of the board that in this case the agency has interpreted the fraud exception to be a constructive knowledge standard, that would be unexplained, it would be inconsistent with prior cases in the same issue, and it would also be the very first time that they had done that. It is true that Weyerhaeuser never had an opportunity to respond to the fraud exception arguments on a constructive knowledge standard. So if the court were to take up that view, we would submit that this case would need to be remanded to give Weyerhaeuser an opportunity to argue the facts and the law in the record on that standard.
We're into your rebuttal time, but there seems to be a fact dispute that I'd like you to comment on, and that's about the existence of the entity called the Weyerhaeuser Car Shop and whether these employees performed all or only some of their work for Duke QE. And I don't know how we could answer that without a remand. And if you don't want a remand on that issue, then would you be willing to concede that these employees performed all of their work for DQE and that the Weyerhaeuser Car Shop isn't really a separate entity?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, WCS or Weyerhaeuser Car Shop is a short title definition that the board used in its decision because they hadn't yet decided whether the shop employees were paper company employees or railroad employees. WCS, Weyerhaeuser Car Shop, clearly is not a separate entity. It's not a term that Weyerhaeuser ever used. It's a convenient term that the board used in its decision. Secondly, I can point you to the record on, and I may have to do it during my rebuttal, but the record in the board's, I think it's the board's decisions before the final decision, they comment on the fact that the employees did work for Weyerhaeuser, for DQE, and for third parties. So that's already in the record. It is not the case that they only did work for DQE.
Mr. Go ahead. Mr. Chase, just as a point of interest, is it the practice of the board or is it your practice to use initials?
It turned out when the whole record was in that the employees' names were in the record, but it is my understanding that it's the practice of the board for privacy reasons to avoid using names in the decisions.
In their decisions.
Correct.
I mean, it's kind of counter to openness that federal courts are directed to, and appropriately so, to I mean, I'm assuming that neither Judge Rovner nor Judge Mannion nor I are related to any of these employees, but it's not helpful in cases where it's unnecessary. And I don't understand the privacy context for employees to be mentioned by initials. Is there some concern on retaliation? What is the board? I assume you practice before the board, and maybe
I do. I think the board's concern is
this isn't charged to your time.
I think the board's concern is that information about employees will get into the public domain. I don't think their concern is specific to retaliation because the companies have the information.
Exactly.
And in terms of the court, the record does contain, I know it's, you know, the horse is out of the barn if there's an issue, but the record does contain the full names of all the employees
exactly.
in both cases.
So I just wonder what the advantage is to it. But thank you for answering the question.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Shays. Mr. Blank?
Maybe we dated
Good morning. My name is Carl Blank. I represent the United States Railroad Retirement Board, respondent agency in this case. Before I go anywhere else, let me answer your question about the initials and so forth and how we get into that. Our decisions are published on the Internet, and the format of the decisions are prepared internally to eliminate the names so that when they're published, they go straight out so that the identities are masked and the decisions can just be used in a generic sense. You're right, absolutely right, Your Honor. Under our statute, there's no disclosure problem as far as using the individual names in a case like this. Section 12D of the RUIA, which is incorporated into the Railroad Retirement Act, allows disclosure to this court. There's no problems whatsoever.
Could I start you out with the same, very same question that I started your friend out with? Who bears the burden of production and the burden of proof? Who must show fraud before the board may correct compensation records beyond the four, you know, beyond the four-year mark?
Well, I think there's two answers to that, really. If the employee is coming to us challenging his record under Section 9, 231H in Title 45, the employee has the burden of challenging that something's amiss in the compensation records of the Railroad Retirement Board. However, once the matter is before the board could certainly obtain whatever evidence it needed from the employer if it believed that that was necessary. The Act authorizes us, of course, to obtain such information as is necessary to render decisions and indeed even compel production of documents and testimony under subpoena, administrative subpoena. I'd like to preface my remarks this morning with just a mention that the board structure as a board is perhaps unusual in the federal government, although it's certainly not unique. And particularly in the railroad industry, Congress has devolved duties on agencies that are composed of boards. The Railway Labor Act disputes are adjusted in the National Railroad Adjustment Board. The Surface Transportation Board has jurisdiction under the Interstate Commerce Commission and so forth. And also just in the general pension area, often pensions are awarded by police pension boards or that sort of thing. The notion being that there would be a sort of a participatory aspect of the decision process, in particular the Railroad Retirement Act, because we have representative from the industry on both sides, railroad labor and railroad management, Our decisions are both adjudications and a representative process that results in the typical decision. Now, when you see most of our decisions, disability decisions and that sort of thing, we're really acting as an agency in a generic sense. In this sort of case, we really have before us matters that are dealing with labor relations issues, and therefore it's significant that the final decision in this case is a unanimous decision by all three members of the board.
And you had a dissenting member here.
Not in 06, I believe. We do have dissents in other cases, Your Honor, or other aspects of this case, but in single 06-26.
Okay, I'm sorry.
This morning we have, of course, the employees and the employer both disagreeing with what we did. By some measure, I would submit that perhaps we did the right thing.
I wondered why Mr. Newell didn't sit in the middle somewhere. Rather, why you didn't sit in the middle somewhere.
I was afraid I wouldn't get a seat here, Your Honor.
Can you help me with this? Is it your theory that the board has authority under 211.16A to grant the service credits back to 1995? Or are you contending that the board acted under B after finding a fraud? I mean, you seem to be arguing that the board reasonably defined fraud using a new or should have known standard.
Yes, we're using
the
subsection B, Your Honor.
Okay. But the board seems to be saying it found no fraud, as that term is commonly understood, right?
I would say that is correct. The basis, we have to go back to Section 9 of the Act itself. All of the previous court decisions on Section 9 of the Road Retirement Act and the credibility complaints and issues, all of them state that Section 9 and its four-year limitation applies to employees but not to the board. The board had authority to go back however it wanted to under Section 9 to do justice and correct its records in a particular case. We cite the
So that would be under Section 9 and not under 211.16A?
Section 9 of Title 45, Your Honor, the Railroad Retirement Act itself, 211 is our regulation.
Yeah.
Now, the last case that was decided under Section 9 actually was decided before 1997 when we promulgated 211.16.
Okay, so forgive me, but and it'll be on the recording, but under Section 9 of
the Railroad Retirement Act. That's 231H.
Okay.
45 U.S.C. 231H.
Okay. Just one more time. I'm sorry.
Certainly. It's 45 U.S.C. 231H.
Okay. I got it.
Certainly.
Gives the board authority to go forward. You say that the 4 years only applies to employees but not to the board?
Yes, sir.
And that...
That's quite clear.
And that the four-year fraud, the exception to the four-year fraud doesn't apply to the board?
Well, here's where we get this morning's case, Your Honor. We essentially have an issue of the first impression here. All the previous cases were decided under that provision of the Railroad Retirement Act itself before 1997 when we promulgated this regulation. The regulation imposes limitations on when the board will go back beyond the 4 years, which is specified by the statute, and change compensation records, presumably in favor of the employee. Now, Section 9 itself has no reference whatsoever to fraud. The word fraud appears in our regulation, but not in Section 9.
So how does that work as a bypass? Or maybe not? You say it's not a bar, I think you use that word.
Fraud isn't a bar under Section 9. However, under our regulation, we've imposed limitations on ourselves under our regulation as to the conditions under which we will and won't go back beyond the four-year period of time. And the issue really in this case is what does fraud mean in that regulation? Does it mean sort of a traditional notion of intent to deceive, or can it mean something broader?
Forgive me, but so in other words, it's Section 9 of 45 U.S.C. Section 231. That section.
Your Honor, I'm referring to Section 9 of the Railroad Retirement Act itself. 231H is the U.S. Code citation that section.
Okay. So that's the authority that the board used to grant service credits to GSCH and DSR going back to 1995, in other words, beyond the four-year limit?
Well, the short answer, Your Honor, is yes, because our authority derives from the Railroad Retirement Act itself.
Okay.
We have, in addition, however, the regulation that we promulgated and that relates to this issue as well.
211.16B?
Correct.
Okay. And under that, there has to be a finding of fraud to go back beyond 4 years.
Right. Well, yes.
But you also found that there was no fraud. Were you using 211.16A as the you were using B for granting the credits beyond the 4 years.
Yes.
Okay. So
it's page 8 of the record in the board's decision, in the final paragraph, states that the board finds that the report, which has been mentioned so earlier this morning about the auditor's report to the
95
employer.
95 report.
Yes.
See, I'm very mixed up, but you can see that. Because it seemed to me that you were saying that Section B limited the authority to situations of fraud if Section A allowed you to say no fraud if the employer simply should have known if they qualified for the credit. You probably don't even understand my question, because I don't.
If I can make a stab at it, Your Honor, I believe... look at the regulation myself.
See, should have known is such a much lower threshold than fraud.
Yes, the 211.16A of our regulations establishes a general rule equivalent to what Section 9 or 231H in the U.S. Code does. And then we come down to bases for making the beyond the four-year corrections. Section 9 of the Act itself just states that records will be presumed final after 4 years. 211.16, our regulation, details what we'll do in instances where it's beyond 4 years, how we will handle cases like the one we have here this morning. 211.16B B1 states that the board may correct a report of compensation after the time limit set forth in paragraph A, which merely repeats the four-year limitation in the statute itself. where the compensation was posted or not posted as a result of fraud on the part of the employer. That establishes an exception to the paragraph C of that regulation, which states limitation on crediting service further down. The limitation there essentially says the board has to be satisfied the taxes were collected over on the IRS side with respect to the period of time the services we're talking about. B says, well, even if the taxes aren't collected, in this instance, we won't pay attention to that.
Unless so is there fraud. A conflict here in all... Is there a conflict in these various provisions, or do they all fit neatly together in a little bundle?
I would hope, Your Honor. I believe
that
that's true.
I think you're all geniuses for understanding.
Hardly.
Well, the thing is, though, is there a different definition of fraud then?
Does
the board doesn't have to adhere to what I will call, say, an employer would assume fraud is, and the board says, well, fraud, in our view, doesn't amount to what other people might think of fraud. We think if they didn't do something right or they should have done something right or something like that, that's good enough. Because it seems to me when you set up a regulation, even though it may have some refinement of the statute, you got to follow it. And the employer and the people who are regulated by it need to know what the standards are. And it can't be something that changes just because you think, you know, in this case, I think we ought to have a different standard. That seems to be what happened here.
Well, that's a reasonable objection, Your Honor. I think one answer may be to look elsewhere in the Railroad Retirement Act itself. Section 13 of the Act, and that would be 45 U.S.C. 231L, is the penalties provision of our Act. It's a kind of a misdemeanor statute that establishes a penalty of a fine of not more than $10,000 or imprisonment not exceeding 1 year. Further down it states that any person who shall knowingly make or cause to be made any false or fraudulent statement or report. Our position in this case, in a nutshell, really, is that once that 95 report by outside sources was provided to Weyerhaeuser concerning creating a concern about the way that they were handling their employees between Weyerhaeuser and the railroad, they were on notice that they had a problem that needed to be straightened out. The steps that weren't taken after that point in time, the board found was a sufficient basis to reopen up to the point in time that Weyerhaeuser had that report. I see my time is up. That is essentially the points that I wanted to make. If there's no other questions, thank you for your
time. Thank you, Mr. Blank. Mr. Newell?
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Bert Newell from Hot Springs, Arkansas. I'm here on behalf of the six career employees of the D. Queen and Eastern Railroad Company in rural Arkansas. I think the most important thing I can do here in my 10 minutes is to outline for you what I know in this record is a course of the record is replete with evidence of an intent to deceive on behalf of Weyerhaeuser Company to the Railroad Retirement Board. That's what this is about. It is about fraud. There have been three cases decided by the board since the regs were changed in 1997. The Chandler case was decided in 2001. The DL case was decided in 2005. And our case, of course, was decided in 2006. All three of those cases do, in fact, cite to the reg, and they have all three found fraud. And fraud is not a defined term in the regs, but it has been defined in a workable format in these three cases. In the Chandler case, it was essentially defined as a willful failure to report for the purpose of saving money. In the DL case, it was defined, it was explained as a situation where the employee submitted facts that were tantamount to a willful failure, and the employer ignored it, did not reply back. Now, in our case, in decision 0626, the board has found both, because in our case, we submitted reams of documents to the board showing fraud on behalf of the employer. The employer never once, even up through today's date, through our argument, this employer has never once addressed the factual accounts that these employers have provided to the Railroad Retirement Board. And I can cite to, in preparing for this argument, I cited to, I found 18 specific instances in the record that point to an intent to deceive on the part of Weyerhaeuser Company to the Railroad Retirement Board. What they did is, when they were audited, they replied, their senior HR manager and their senior tax manager answered questionnaires submitted by the Railroad Retirement Board, in which they created a fictional entity known as Weyerhaeuser Car Shop. And they told the Railroad Retirement Board that these employees worked for the Weyerhaeuser Car Shop. And so what we did in return is we submitted a brochure showing that this is the D. Queen and Eastern Railroad Company. We submitted an organizational chart. We pointed out instances where these questionnaires were answered falsely by a Weyerhaeuser Company. And we submitted that this is direct evidence of fraud. And if you think that it's not, or if it's insufficient, would you please give us a hearing? Because we will come to Chicago. We will help the board to know who the principal players are so that they can subpoena witnesses and compel production of documents. And we were never accorded that opportunity, though we requested it on at least 10 different occasions. Even without additional proof, Your Honors, there is proof in this record. If you will look closely, I know you will, and I've tried to cite as many of those instances as I could in my brief, you will find that the board made the correct call when it found fraud. When it found that Section 211 allows it to go back beyond those 4 years, it made the correct call. But it simply did not consider enough of the evidence that we had submitted. If the board had looked at it more closely, the board would have gone and the board would have awarded creditable service years for these employees back to the time when they started, because they are career railroad employees. That's all they've ever done. They've worked at the DeQueen and Eastern Railroad Company. All of their salary is charged back to Weyerhaeuser Company. They have a separate plant. You know, their business is here. They're all here together. They simply do not work for a Weyerhaeuser Car Shop. There isn't such a thing. There never has been.
Is it Weyerhaeuser that pays them?
These six people get paychecks from Weyerhaeuser Company, but on the payroll records, that sum is charged back to Weyerhaeuser by the DeQueen and Eastern Railroad Company. Which also...
Oh, I missed that. Yeah.
In other words...
DeQueen charges it back to Weyerhaeuser?
That's correct.
Well, I thought you said Weyerhaeuser pays them.
I had it backwards.
Say it again.
Weyerhaeuser pays the salaries, but the Queen and Eastern Railroad Company turns and kicks that money back to Weyerhaeuser Company to pay them back.
I'm still not getting it.
The Queen reimburses Weyerhaeuser after Weyerhaeuser pays them. Oh. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Dollar for dollar.
Okay.
Even though the board decision found that not to be the case because Weyerhaeuser told them that wasn't the case. But the board now knows that is the case.
How does an arrangement like that come about, Mr. Newell? Does the record reflect that?
The record has opinions of my clients as to how that came about. That was unrebutted. Their opinion was that it was historically for the purpose of saving incremental payroll taxes. Weyerhaeuser Company, one thing that Mr. Shea said was that we never had the opportunity to respond. And the board sent all of the information I had sent it in a package to Weyerhaeuser Company in December of 2005. And said, here is what these people are saying. Would you please respond? Instead, all the board got from Weyerhaeuser was a four-page letter that cited technical reasons why the board should not be considering this stuff, but never once contradicted any of the allegations.
You know, I have a fact question that I want to just ask you about. Because you seem to assert that LP's case was reopened because there was new evidence. What was that new evidence?
Your Honor, I asserted that it could be opened under Section 261.11, which says, in any case in which the three-member board may deem proper, the board may direct that any decision which is not otherwise subject to reopening under this part shall be reopened. I believe that in the board's brief, they cited to the fact that once they had found that these other employees were, that they should go back 6 additional years for these others who were working side by side with LP, the board said that is new evidence that we must correct the record for LP because otherwise we would have a situation where, for instance, we were treating the three of you differently for no reason.
And the authority that it used to reopen was 261.11.
I believe that's correct. That is what I believe they used, and I believe that's what they cited. And I also have in the record at page 46 is correspondence where the board actually told me back in, I think, 05, that we have the authority to open anything anytime we want to. And I believe 261.11 says that as well. In the Chandler case, the employee waited 12 years to make his complaint, and the board found that that's okay under the circumstances because these are very sensitive issues, and normally employees are hesitant to make these claims for fear of losing their job. In my case, BB and KN waited that long, and the board found that they simply waited too long. I believe there's an inconsistency that should be reversed as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Shays?
Thank you.
Your time will expire, but you may have 2 minutes.
Thank you. I'd like to... I would like, if I have time, to give you my rundown of the statute, the regs, and the decision, but I really think I need to spend my time on Mr. Newell's comments. First of all, every single assertion he made here today is in the record, was before the retirement board, and was found, based on substantial evidence, to not constitute fraud. There's not a new thing that he said that's not in that record. He said that Weyerhaeuser had never once addressed the factual allegations. I would submit to you that every single response we made in the course of the audit of the retirement board was to the merits. Every single response. Mr. Newell and the employees really don't want to think about that audit process. It is a considerable undertaking to go through a retirement board audit process. We cooperated. We provided information. The board had all of that information when it concluded that there was no fraud in this case. With respect to the chargeback is in the record. The chargeback, I believe, is part of the reason the board concluded that these employees were employees of the railroad. And I would remind the court that that's not an issue on appeal. We are not seeking review of that issue. The chargeback is in the record just like everything else. This notion that my comment earlier was that we had no opportunity to respond to the board's newly minted standard of constructive knowledge. I did not say that we never had an opportunity to respond to their review of the case on the issue of a fraud under a willful standard. I believe that we did. And finally, on the procedural point, the board, actually not finally, BB and KN, Mr. Newell says, should have their long ago time credited, like in the Chandler case, because you can't expect employees to come forward when they're still employed because there could be intimidation. Well, that's not consistent with the record. BB and KN were very open about their views of the coverage issue. There was no, unlike the Chandler case where the employee felt he couldn't rock the boat, in this case, BB and KN were comfortable going to Weyerhaeuser and saying, look, I disagree with the way you're covering me. So there's no notion here that they should be allowed extra time. Very briefly on the statute and the regs, the statute decides the second case. The statute says Section 9 is a statute of limitations on employers and employees, and that's how you can deal with the second case that's before you today. The regs, as Mr. Blank said, bound the board to only give extra credit in cases where there was fraud. And with respect to the should have known standard, I would make one final comment. The board found that Weyerhaeuser was not covered by the Railroad Retirement Act. It is not logical or intuitive that an employee wouldn't think that an employer wouldn't think from that conclusion that the employees are not covered. This notion that the report, which is wrong as a matter of law, should somehow give us enough constructive knowledge to go to the next step, turn the whole thing upside down. Okay, we're not covered as a company, but we should think about whether our employees are covered. That's perhaps something we all today, having looked at this whole thing, can say we would have anticipated, but I would submit to you that that's not intuitive. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chase. Thank you, Mr. Newell and Mr. Blank. The case is taken under advisement.